Carl Dukes in for Bill Ryder today. What is going on? I am so excited about football being back. I don't know about you. As a matter of fact, I'm in Atlanta. I was at Falcons training camp yesterday, and the excitement is real, not just in Atlanta, but all over the country as camps are underway. And as we start today, the scare yesterday with Justin Fields had everybody on edge, right? I mean, immediately it was, it's serious. And then you had all the fake news out there talking about what was going on with Justin. Luckily, it's not a big deal. This is great news for the Jets because they have invested and they believe, and Aaron Glenn believes in Justin Fields, but he goes down with that injury and then is carted off the field. And that is the reports, right? Justin Fields carted off the field. So you immediately start wigging out like, oh, Jets bad luck. Here we go again. And in Atlanta, I got to tell you, immediately the reaction is Terry Fontenot on the phone right now? And it was weird because for those who don't get my gist, Kirk Cousins is still on the Atlanta Falcons roster. And everybody believes that Kirk Cousins is going to be traded at some point if and when, God forbid, a quarterback goes down around the National Football League, a starting quarterback. And so as soon as this happened, literally people were like, is he making the phone call? Have they called him? Now, nothing played out that way because, again, the Jets ultimately found out he suffered a dislocated toe. He's day-to-day. He's going to be fine. He's on the field today. No big deal. He's not going to miss any significant time. Which is great news for Justin Fields because I think he's going to be better than people give him credit for. I think Aaron Glenn, their new offensive coordinator, they're going to allow him to play a little bit freer. But it was weird yesterday when that news broke. But from one quarterback to another, because I find it interesting that we are already hearing these reports about the Bears and specifically Caleb Williams. And I don't know, what do you think about Caleb Williams, by the way? What do you think about Caleb Williams? Do you think he's going to be a dude? Or do you think ultimately, now that Ben Johnson is there, he's going to be a guy that there are no more excuses, okay, for Caleb Williams? You can talk about Matt Eberflus and what that was, which was a disaster. But there are the excuses are out of the realm of us looking at Caleb Williams and going, well, it's the offensive coordinator's fault. Because Ben Johnson's been the hottest offensive coordinator in the National Football League the last 3 years. As a matter of fact, he decided he didn't want to take jobs and was offered jobs over the last three off seasons, joined these coaching cycles, and he kept saying, nah, I'm not ready to leave the farm yet. Oh, I'm going to stay here. And my analogy has always been, you know, these coaches, they build their resumes, and then at some point, you've got to go prove that you are who we think you are. And for Ben Johnson, it was almost like he was afraid to leave that Lions situation. Now, he's going to say, hey, we had a really good team. We had a chance to win the Super Bowl, and I didn't want to leave. But there's a side of me that also says maybe he just wasn't ready. And so the analogy for me is guy, you know, builds his resume up, and then all of a sudden it's, okay, mom and dad, I'm leaving. I'm walking down this long road. I got my bag. I'll see you guys later. Love you. I'll call. And you go off on your own journey. And Ben Johnson, for 2 years straight, two off seasons, nope, not interested. Offered a lot of money. No, I'm not going to take the job. Commanders wanted him. No, I'm not going to do it. But then he takes the Bears job. And so this offseason, all of the hype and a lot of it surrounds this relationship with Ben Johnson and, of course, his quarterback, Caleb Williams. Carl Dukes in for Bill Ryder today. And for Caleb, here's where I'm at. I think Caleb Williams is talented. There's no debating that. But I also think when he was at Oklahoma and he was with Lincoln Riley and then Lincoln Riley leaves and he goes to USC, that part of this was there was this trust with Lincoln Riley like, you know the offense, just do what you do. And there was no discipline. So when you watch Caleb Williams, yeah, he can make all the throws and his escapability is undeniable. But I also think there was this loosey-goosey thing, right? Where it's just like, oh, you improvise and you make a play because you're Caleb. And I don't think Lincoln Riley had that kind of discipline. So you go from that, whether it's at Oklahoma or USC, then you get drafted in the NFL, and your first year in the NFL, you're sacked 68 times. Not his fault, but also you become gun-shy, right? You become a little bit like, hold on to it, run around, oh, what do I do with it? But that lack of discipline is what I think Caleb Williams has been lacking. So literally, after, you know, day one of the Bears camp, it's being reported. Courtney Cronin, she does a terrific job of covering the Bears. There's multiple reports out there about how Ben Johnson pulled the starting offense off the field during a drill in their first practice of training camp. Now, many people look at this and they go, she's trying to send a message. I look at it a different way. He is telling Caleb Williams specifically, I need you to pay attention to details. If you are going to be as good as we think you can be, I need you to pay attention to details. And this is an area, especially with young quarterbacks, and especially when it's been loosey-goosey, you just make a play, Caleb, you out there, do what you do through college. It's hard. And so the reports were that, you know, he had a fumble, they didn't get the snap off in time. There was like a multitude of things that happened, right? They didn't get out of the huddle in time. You can laugh if you want to, but this tells me a lot about Ben Johnson. And when you start talking about guys that pay attention to details, Andy Reid, Harbaughs, you start talking about the Sean Paytons of the world. These guys are winners. The Sean McVays. Thank you, Carl. You're welcome. These guys are winners. And part of it is, it's more than just, you know, we hear this term all the time. Oh, can they manage men? You know, can you be a guy that handles the men in the locker room? Attention to detail. When Belichick was at his best, believe it or not, it was attention to detail. Did you guys see this? Side note. The ACC media days are going on, and Belichick's speaking to the media, and Belichick literally told the media, right, he's talking about UNC and his team, and look, I have no idea what they're going to do this season. If you're an UNC alum, good luck. I have no idea. All I know is they're going to be on TV a lot because of Belichick. I don't know if his team's going to be good or not. I don't know if they're going to the college football playoff. Clemson is the best team in the ACC, and that's where it starts for me. But Belichick literally told the media this week, my private life won't be a distraction. When have we ever heard Bill Belichick talk about his private life being a distraction? I'll wait. Never. Not one time in the 24 years he was in New England did he ever say in a press conference, and he's in the Boston area, they're going after him every single week. Even when they were winning, it wasn't perfect. And you know the hard questions were being asked. At what point did Belichick ever come out in any presser that you remember and say, my personal life won't be a distraction? Because I don't remember it. And I heard this and I just started laughing because it tells you where he is and what's been going on. Now, I don't want to get into the whole girlfriend thing and all the offseason stuff that's happened. What I'm telling you is when Belichick was at his best, attention, and I'm clapping my hands, to details. That's what made him great. He had a great quarterback, but he also was great at that. And so for me, Ben Johnson finally leaving the farm, I'm gone. See you, Mom and Dad. I love you. All right. Dan Campbell, thank you for everything. I didn't know if he could lead men. I didn't know if he'd be able to handle a locker room, because when guys go from OCs or DCs to get these jobs in the National Football League, it's the biggest thing we wonder about. You go, well, okay, he's a good coordinator, but because there's so many other elements. So they had a sloppy start. First team offense back to the Bears during 11-on-11 period, pre-snap penalty. That's not paying attention to details. Fumbled snap. That's not paying attention to details. Couldn't get out of the huddle in time. That's certainly not paying attention to the details. And then on top of that, Caleb Williams falls down after evading pressure instead of trying to make a play. Now, look, these things happen, but it's the little things that make the difference in the National Football League. Ask the Baltimore Ravens. Ask them. Ask the Buffalo Bills. Ask them. So when we talk about the Bears and Caleb Williams' ceiling, what do you think it is? Because I'm not sure what it is. Here's what I know about that particular class. We're talking about six quarterbacks selected in the first round. You guys remember this? Caleb goes one. Then Jaden Daniels, dude, goes after him. Is anybody right now listening on the Infinity Sports Network, no matter where you are around the country, willing to tell me that Jaden Daniels is not a dude? Now, many of you debated and doubted Drake May, but I've got to tell you, a lot of that was the end of Belichick and how things were being done in New England, but the kid still showed promise. I think New England's got a quarterback. Did you guys see what I saw with Drake May at the end here of the season? Then a guy named Michael Penix Jr. was drafted, and everybody was up in arms. Oh, how could they do this? This is dumb. It's stupid. What are they doing? They've already got a Kirk Cousins. You know what all of those people are saying right now? Thank God they drafted Michael Penix Jr. Doesn't look so bad, does it? When teams make a concerted effort to think about now and the future, it's smart. Falcons weren't the only one to do this. We've seen teams over the years do this. The Packers did it. Everybody just forgets. Oh, yeah, Aaron Rodgers, he's so great. He sat on the bench. Favre, all these guys. It's part of understanding now, Alex Smith with the Kansas City Chiefs, and the future, Patrick Mahomes. Then J.J. McCarthy was drafted. I'm talking about six quarterbacks taken in the first round last year, 2024. He gets hurt. But in the preseason, he looked like he might be a problem. When you said, okay, does he get it? Can he make the throws? And he made a few of those throws, and then he gets injured. We know how that story goes, right? But he's back. And then the Bo Nix thing. Let's all be honest. Raise your hand if you thought Bo Nix was this good, because I didn't. And I watched him at Auburn and Oregon, and I did not think he was going to be this good. But I know why he is as good as he is, or as good as he looked last season. Do you know why? Because he plays for a coach who pays attention to details. Now, Bo Nix also admitted that he not only worked out, but visited and picked the brain of Drew Brees, who won a Super Bowl with Sean Payton and has a terrific relationship with him. And why wouldn't he? He's running the same offense. Here's what you need to be looking at. These are the things you need to be thinking about. So Bo Nix gets it, but I didn't think he's going to be that good. Let's be honest. Raise your hand. Don't lie. 888-710-4476. That's the phone number. 888-710-4ISN. Carl Dukes in for Bill Ryder today. And I only bring this up to say that the success of Jaden Daniels, what I think Drake May is, what Michael Penix Jr. is going to be, we're going to see what J.J. McCarthy is. This is truly his rookie year coming into this season with the Vikings, and Bo Nix going into his second year with a dominant defense. Denver's potential's off the charts. I know everybody wants to talk about Kansas City and everything that's going on there, and rightfully so because of Mahomes. But Denver has a lot of potential. Do not sleep on the Broncos. But that class tied the record from 1983 where six were taken in the first 12 picks, five in the top 10. And I think five of those guys are players. I cannot say that yet about J.J. McCarthy. I got a three-game sample space of Michael Penix Jr. I'm sold. I'm just telling you right now. Watch out. He can spin it. He can make every throw. His deep ball is absolutely beautiful. I'm sold on five of those guys. The J.J. McCarthy thing, got to wait to see. But I also know that his head coach is pretty good at paying attention to the details. Ask Sam Darnold. 888-710-4ISN. So as far as the Bears are concerned, first day, pulls his first team off. Everybody's like, oh, wow, what's he trying to do? What's the deal here? Why is Ben Johnson trying to make a big deal out of this? Because he understands no matter how talented Caleb Williams is, he's not going to get to where he wants to be unless he's doing these things. And it's what all the greats have. I'm not debating his talent. But if you told me right now, like, Caleb Williams is going to be the first 4,000-yard passer in Bears history, and he'll complete 70% of his passes, which, oh, by the way, is his goal. That's his goal. He stated it. And I love it. Set your bar high and go for it. But I don't know if he's going to get there. I mean, how many years have we been talking about a Bears quarterback passing 4,000 yards? Forever? So when asked about taking his first team off the field the other day, Ben Johnson laughed and said, yeah, you know, we just wanted to keep things moving. We wanted the other units to get their reps. he's joking. But I love this. And for me, early on, Ben Johnson understands exactly what he needs to make this offense click the way that it needs to. See, he didn't need to do this with Jared Goff. Goff had come from Sean McVay. Thank you, Carl. And he already had this. What Goff needed was guys around him, which Brad Johnson, the general manager there, provided him with. Right? You go back and look at their drafts. You look at their free agent moves. All of a sudden, Detroit got good in like 3 years. And that's all through drafting and free agency moves. So once they did that, this part of it, he had down. Now can we execute the way we need to? Caleb's not had this. He didn't have it in college with Lincoln Riley. And he certainly didn't have it with Matt Eberflus and his staff in the first year there with the Chicago Bears. We're coming back. We got plenty to dive into today. We will talk about the complex legacy of Hulk Hogan, who passed away yesterday at the age of 71. We'll get into some Cowboys conversation because, oh, it's already started. Dak Prescott saying, if you do not believe, you can get out of this locker room. A lot more football conversation on the way. Buy or sell coming up in the 11 o'clock hour as well. Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder today here on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast. Welcome back to Ryder Than You.
If he hires someone to be a movie reviewer, maybe he could hire you if he branches out to pop culture, Ryan. You know, you're like, Jaws, that movie is dumb. There's a shark. Why is a shark in the water? You don't even know what it's, you know? Like, oh, that's iconic. You didn't even know. Who proved this? Who's Steven Spielberg? Steven Spiel stupid, huh?
On the Infinity Sports Network.
You know, with Jaws' 50-year anniversary, Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder. I did like the dumbest thing that I've probably done in a long time. And it really wasn't. I saw the 50th anniversary a few weeks back and I was like, oh, I haven't seen Jaws in, oh, I don't know, years. So I turned it on and my wife and I are sitting there. And first of all, you know, you realize how brilliant Steven Spielberg was in making this movie prior to CGI and all the stuff and technology we have now, right? And I just watched literally a documentary about how they had to build the shark. And I think they built like three prototypes or whatever. And, you know, it was on hydraulics. And when you see it out of the water, it looks corny. But when the movie comes on and, you know, she runs into the water, right? And they're like, we're going swimming. And I'm sitting there and I'm watching this. And I got to be honest with you. After hearing Bill talk about that on that promo, as soon as that music came on, I was like looking around the room. I'm like, I felt like I was in the water. That music still scares the bejesus out of me. I mean, I don't know about you. If you're at the beach and somebody just had a loudspeaker and that came on and you're like, yay, we're out here at the beach, you'd run. You would start running, I guarantee you. Movie still is really good. It just is. And even though now we know all the tricks of the trade and, you know, but the fact that he didn't show the shark immediately, it still scares you. Because, you know, she's like the first victim, you know, where she's going underwater and she's moving back and forth, right and left. And you're like, oh, what is going on? Even though we know the movie. Anyways, 50th anniversary this year. It's crazy. Spielberg's pretty special. Hey, this NASCAR race preview that is sponsored by WeatherGuard Truck and Van Equipment. They're just as driven as the hardworking pros they serve. The NASCAR Cup Series heads to Indianapolis Motor Speedway for the Brickyard 400. Defending champion Kyle Larson is once again the favorite at plus 500. The race gets underway Sunday at 2 p.m. Eastern time. Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder. We were talking about quarterbacks, Caleb Williams, the ceiling for Caleb Williams. He's got to get the little things down. And what's crazy is, you know, that's going on in Chicago. And in Cleveland, I love you, Cleveland. Are they slow rolling this Shedeur Sanders thing? I mean, seriously. Four quarterbacks, right? Four quarterbacks. And I don't know, you know, who's going to win the job, Shedeur. I mean, I don't know who ultimately is going to be the quarterback there, Shedeur. But Joe Flacco's there. He led him to the playoffs a couple of years ago. Kenny Pickett's played a lot of football, you know, whether it was with the Steelers or the Eagles. Dylan Gabriel, who they drafted before Shedeur Sanders. And every day now, right, like Mary Kay Cabot, who covers the Browns, and she does a terrific job. There's a lot of people I know in Cleveland. They're literally putting out like, all right, how did all four quarterbacks do every single day? And it's a little overwhelming. And I think the thing that we all kind of knew fighting this uphill battle for Shedeur Sanders, and look, the reason why I'm saying Shedeur is the excitement is real, okay? The momentum is real. And whether the kid can play or not, we'll find out eventually. But I just feel like, you know, this notion like, oh, well, I don't know if he's going to play because of the amount of playing time he's going to see or lack thereof in the preseason may or may not determine when he gets his opportunity. But if you think for one second, that Shedeur Sanders is not going to get an opportunity to take this job, you're out of your mind. He will. Now, when that happens, when that opportunity is going to come, I do not know. And Mary Kay Cabot, again, reported this a few weeks back with the Browns saying, hey, Gabriel is a little bit in front of Shedeur when it comes to the system and the schematics and all of that stuff. And that's fine. I mean, at the end of the day, when I throw you out there and you're in the fire, you're either making plays or you're not. You're making completions or you're turning it over or you're not. Like, I don't care about that. I think it matters just from a comfort level standpoint. If you talk about, you know, how comfortable maybe Shedeur Sanders is compared to maybe Kenny Pickett or Dylan Gabriel. But this slow rolling thing, I mean, I just feel like that's what's going on. And my question is why? If you feel like, well, we picked Gabriel and we owe him or we have to, you know, give him an opportunity. Okay. You went and got Kenny Pickett. You didn't even pick up his fifth-year option. I mean, like, there's no future there. Flacco was on the couch chilling and literally, bring, the phone rings. He's like, yeah. Oh, y'all want me back? Okay, I'll go get a check. No problem. I'll be there. Flacco is literally probably with the brew in his hand. So Flacco knows, you know, he's had an unbelievable career, Super Bowl champion, bet on himself, made a lot of money. But the reality is, like, where are you going, Browns? Andrew, where are you going? The general manager, where are you guys going? So I feel like they're slow rolling this thing. And I do know the excitement is real. And part of this is, you know, somebody said to me, they said, Dukes, that they're protecting him. They don't want to throw him to the wolves too soon. Okay. I mean, I get it. I don't know if there's an opportune, like the most opportune time to start a quarterback in the NFL. Like, you can't predict that you're going to face the worst team in the NFL, and that's the week you're going to start him. That's rare. But if that's what you believe, okay, they're protecting him. They don't want to throw him to the wolves too soon, so they're going to let Flacco and Pickett and Gabriel, whatever, do this for a while. He is going to, and this is just the nature of it, run fewer plays than all three of those guys. He did at OTAs and he did at minicamp. So I think the perception is, okay, he's not running as many plays, therefore he's not getting as many reps. That must mean that he is not going to have a shot. And I just don't believe that. And again, I get back to Dylan Gabriel, allegedly, is ahead of him with knowledge as far as the offense and schematics. Various reports. Okay, great. But that doesn't mean anything to me. And how much time he gets in the preseason with now less preseason games, is he get mop-up duty and shine in mop-up duty? And how do you look at that when you say, hey, I'm trying to evaluate all four of these quarterbacks? And when I say evaluate, what are you evaluating with Joe Flacco? Flacco's just going to let that thing rip. I mean, that's what he did a couple of years ago, and it really opened up the offense, right? So we know what Joe Flacco is. It's trying to figure out, if you really want to, what Kenny Pickett is, what Dylan Gabriel is or potentially can be, and what Shedeur Sanders is. And for me, I know what Shedeur is. And I've talked about this, so I don't know, the last 2 years when everybody was killing them at Colorado and killing him, and more importantly, his father, about, oh, I don't think he's that good. 70% completion rate, 14,000 yards across four seasons at Jackson State when nobody cared, HBCU. And then when he got to Colorado, he still balled out. 134 touchdowns and 27 picks in those 4 years. Offensive player of the year in the Big 12. All of that goes out of the window. What I learned from all of that is he can play. Dukesism. Can he play? That's all I care about. And the thing about this is when you talk about Dylan Gabriel's ahead of him, Do you guys realize this? Gabriel, and this has kind of become the norm, right? This is the last COVID year for those who don't know. Like, everybody got that extra year. But Dylan Gabriel was in college for like 6 years. He should be ahead of him. He should be ahead of knowledge and schematics. He was in college for 6 years. UCF for three, went to OU for two, and then finished at Oregon. Now, I'm not knocking the kid. This is the nature of college football, where we're at. But give me a break. Like, if I've been on the job 6 years and you were in the job 4 years, I should probably be a little bit ahead of you, specifically when I played in three different systems. I think Shador had four or five different coordinators in the 4 years, a couple at Jackson State and then a few at Colorado. But either way, like, that's the part about this that nobody really wants to talk about with the Browns quarterback situation. I just feel like they're slow rolling this thing. And I don't know why. I'm trying to get the best guy out there, Shador, as soon as possible so I can get my fan base excited and behind the kid. And you know what? He's going to make mistakes. I don't care if you start Dylan Gabriel or if you end up with Kenny Pickett. They're going to make mistakes. But as I was talking about with Caleb Williams, where is the most upside? And again, I go back to this. You know, he slid in the draft. Well documented why. I've talked about it numerous times on my Sunday show here on the Infinity Sports Network. The things that happened and how they tried to maneuver. It's all water under the bridge. What are you going to do now? And the reality is you have a first round talent that you got value for in the fifth round. There's no way Shador should have went in the fifth round. There's just no way. But he did, and the circumstances played out the way they did. So let's stop playing games. And I think with camp, it's just going to get even more interesting every day. Every day we're going to get the report. How did Gabriel do? How did Kenny Pickett do? What did Joe Flacco do? Oh, Shador, did he get any role? Did he get any run today? This is where we're at with Cleveland. I would say, and I'm going to tell you guys, I think, and we'll see. We will talk again about this week 7 or 8. That's my guess. That at some point he gets to run out there. And again, I'm not talking about injuries, all right? I'm just saying, like, okay, you go. But that's what I believe, like, the timetable may be for him to kind of get a shot to take over. But you believe in Kenny Pickett? You believe in Dylan Gabriel? Where is your future with the quarterbacks you have on this roster? And everybody looks at Deshaun Watson. You guys know that's done. It's over. It's finished. Kaput. Bye-bye. See you later. Good riddance. It's over. That's not happening. That's why they drafted two quarterbacks and went out and got Kenny Pickett. It's not just about this year. It's about where are we the next 3 to 5 years and how does this look? 888-710-4ISN is the phone number. You can hit me up. Find us on social media as well. So many ways to get in contact with us here on the Bill Ryder Show. All right, we're coming back. We got plenty more to dive into. The Big Ten kind of flexing this week. Did you guys see this? Big Ten kind of sticking their chest out, saying we are the biggest and the baddest. We'll dive into that coming up here on the show.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
I think what Scottie Scheffler is saying is not that golf isn't important or isn't interesting. It's that you spend your life chasing this thing you think defines your life, and you wake up one day, and if you're lucky enough to have caught it, and I have in my own little way, and he has in a massive way, it turns out that that's great, but the thing that you actually cherish and love the most is something you haven't been chasing. In a much lesser way, I can relate to it, because I chased something my whole life. And then end up with Ryan. Just kidding.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Yeah, Scottie Scheffler. What's going on with Scottie Scheffler? He's pretty good, isn't he? I'm with Bill on this, by the way. Some people are like, they thought that was so introspective, like, you know, he doesn't understand, you know, what he's got. No. It's not the most important thing. And it was great to see him win the Open Championship, the British Open. It was great. But just because he's on top of the world right now in the world of golf, he understands that there's just more. And I think, you know, like when we saw Tiger chasing it, he was singularly focused. That's all he cared about. And it was great. And he was incredible. And he's the greatest golfer I've ever seen with my own two eyes, right? I mean, I get it. He's chasing Jack on the majors, but he changed golf. And for Scottie Scheffler, when he said that last week, as he was, you know, embarking on that tournament and trying to win it, once he got the lead, it was done. I mean, this dude doesn't lose a 54-hole lead. Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder today here on the Infinity Sports Network. But, yeah, I'm with him. My wife told me one time, before we get into who's flexing and pushing their chest out and saying it with their chest, that, you know, she's watched me for a long time. 28, 29 years, whatever it's been, because we met and we didn't date in high school, but we met in high school, and then I got into college, and then we ultimately ended up dating. And, you know, she says, I've watched you chase this, just like Bill was talking about. You chase all this stuff, but when it's all said and done, I'm going to be here. Like, and that's what I got from Scottie Scheffler when he said those things about, you know, the most important things. And he's obviously faith, family, and then golf. So he's an interesting dude, man. But I love his game, and there's no one right now that's even playing to his level. It's not even close. We will see what he does in the final tournament at Eastlake in Atlanta to finish up the season. But it's been a really good year for Scottie Scheffler. If you're just joining us, lots of football conversation because camps are underway. We're going to get into this Cowboy fiasco coming up at 11 o'clock. I have no idea, like zero idea, what the hell Jerry Jones is talking about. I don't get it. He sounds so disconnected. But we're going to get into that. Also, buy or sell is on the way here on the show. Let's talk some college football here for a sec, because everybody right now is trying to fix college football. When I say that, there's a multitude of things going on. They want to fix NIL, and they somewhat have with the court ruling. Now we know schools are paying players. That's kind of been adjusted. They want to fix the portal, which there are two portal windows. They want one. Both, all schools, all the power fours, everybody really wants one portal day. But the other thing they're trying to fix is the college football playoff. And where are you on this, by the way? Is more better or is less better? Because right now we're at 12. We're eventually going to get to 16, and some people believe within the next 5 years it could even be 18 or 20. But as this debate rages, the SEC was the first to hold their media days in early July, and they were like, hey, Greg Sankey, who is the commissioner for the SEC, was like, we're not ready to commit because there are decisions that need to be made. And for Greg Sankey and Tony Petitti, who's the commissioner of the Big Ten, these are the two most powerful conference commissioners in college football. You could say in college, period, because of the amount of teams in their conferences, but also the amount of money and revenue they generate and how they can flex a little bit. You know, I mean, it's not as if I'm going to hold my finger down on the ACC or the Big 12, even though it feels like they're attempting to. So Greg Sankey came out and said, well, we're not really wanting to do what Tony Petitti wants to do, but we've got a great relationship. And Petitti has said the same thing about Greg Sankey. Like, just because we disagree on this doesn't mean that we're not talking and trying to negotiate through it. But Jim Phillips, who's the ACC commish, his conference media days were this week as well. And he was asked about the college football playoff situation. I want you to hear him first before I let you hear Tony Petitti, who wants to really just change fundamentally what this looks like. And there is a reason why he wants to do it. Here's Jim Phillips of the ACC.
I know that there's questions about selection and selection committee. I have great faith and confidence in those committee members. I've served on the men's basketball selection, women's basketball selection committees. I know how difficult that is. These are honorable, honest individuals with great integrity. I do like that we're reviewing the protocol for selection, and I think that that will help. But I want to stay committed to access and fairness to all of college football, not only the ACC, and protect our AQ. So I look forward to our ongoing conversations, and I understand why other leagues feel differently about positioning of the future format. So we'll look forward to some of those ongoing conversations.
Look, right now, currently, if they adopt this Tony Petitti format, this 16-team 4-4-2-2-1 format, the ACC and the Big 12 are screwed. And Jim Phillips knows it. the more teams I can put in, the better my opportunity as a conference is to win a championship. If I only get Ohio State and Georgia every year, or if I get two Big Ten and two SEC teams every year, the ACC and the Big 12 have no shot. Now, the idea, and he said access and fairness, which sounds great. But last year, for example, Indiana gets into the college football playoff, and everybody said this is great. They ran their schedule. They deserve to be in. Then in the playoff, they get drubbed, humiliated. I have always been one who has said, let me see. I believe if you handle your schedule, no matter what conference you come from, you should deserve a shot at maybe running the table and winning a national championship. The problem is nobody believes in some of these lesser conferences, and certainly, you know, outside of the Power Four and the Group of Six conferences, you don't believe that one of those teams could ultimately run the table, win two or three games, and win a national championship. But I'm always saying, let me see, because I think this is what makes it interesting. So when Phillips talks about access and fairness, yeah, technically he's right. But Tony Petitti is like, look, 4-4-2-2-1 is the way that this would go. And you're talking about four automatic bids for his league, the Big Ten, four for the SEC, two for the Big 12, and two for the ACC, and you get one automatic bid for the Group of Six conference champion and three at-large bids. That could go to anybody, right? That could go to any school that Army, like last year, was on the verge of maybe getting into the playoff, which would have been great. But that's what he's saying. He's in favor of play-in games for those automatic bids within the Power Four conferences. So you take out the conference championships, or you lead up to the conference championships with play-in games that could potentially seed your teams in your conference for a chance to play in the college football playoff. You like this? But he's also in favor, and I'm talking about Tony Petitti, of limiting the influential power of a human selection committee who decides who makes the playoff. He thinks that they have a little bit too much power, which is why Jim Phillips is just saying, I respect the committee. He's saying, hey, they do a great job. Let me hear Tony Petitti of the Big Ten.
With respect to format, the Big Ten has been consistent in its strong preference for a playoff system that allocates spots based on conference standings and the results of play-in games. We want to better connect the regular season and the postseason. A critical goal of any postseason format, regardless of sport, is to keep as many teams alive as deep into the season as possible. We want more conference games to matter in November.
And I agree with that. Like, I do too. I want the games that I'm watching late to matter and not just have this already, you know, selected for us as we head to December and it's a wasted month of football until we get to the start of the playoff. I agree with that. But I also know that part of Petitti's issue is that the SEC is not willing to go to 9-game schedule. They currently play 8 regular season games. I hate to be the bearer of bad news, and I know the ACC coaches were talking about this, and I know the Big Ten coaches were talking about this, but there is no conference harder than the SEC week in and week out. There are no off weeks. Even when you think you're going to Vandy, ask Alabama. So the SEC is like, wait a minute. Why are we going to go to 9 regular season games if it's not going to benefit me with more potential automatic bids? I'll just stay at where we're at, and we can keep the full format and the playoff format where we're at right now, 12 teams. Everybody's ready to jump to 16. The problem is nobody can come to an agreement on what we need to do with this new 16-team format. Petitti believes one thing. Greg Sankey says, you know what? 5 automatic bids and 11 at-large bids. That's what we need to do. And the ACC commissioner, Jim Phillips, is like, can we get included over here? Hello? 888-710-4ISN. Nothing, I think, is going to get resolved anytime soon. But within a matter of 3 weeks this month, you've seen 3 different commissioners. And look, the Big 12 feels the same way as the ACC. They're on the same page. You're like, wait a minute. Two? Why do you guys get 4? We get 4. And the Big Ten and the SEC is literally looking down at them and going, because we're the SEC. And then Tony Petitti goes, because we're the Big Ten. Really, it's what, 16? 18 teams? I mean, it's the Big Ten, but we know how many teams they have. That is why. Nothing is going to get resolved anytime soon. And with all this flexing, whether it be Petitti or Greg Sankey, they ultimately are going to come to an agreement. And sorry, ACC teams, sorry, Big 12 teams, with the addition now of Oklahoma and Texas in the SEC, it just strengthened the conference. And ultimately, those two guys are going to get what they want. I don't know what it looks like. Could be 4-4-2-2-1. Could be 5 automatic bids and 11 at large. Could be 16 teams. I don't know. But whatever it's going to look like, I'm guaranteeing you, they're going to get what they want. And this is going to look different in just a few years. And when that happens, the SEC is also going to move to 9 games. And that's when the SEC is going to get a new big fat contract when it comes to streaming and television. In 2022, the Big Ten, $7 billion deal over 7 years. They have the most members, and that deal includes Fox, CBS. They took over the CBS 3 o'clock segment. It used to be all SEC on Saturdays. That's Big Ten now. They're streaming. It's a monster deal. And the SEC is set to do a very similar deal, but the caveat is once they go to 9 games. And Greg Sankey's in no rush if it's not going to benefit his members. 888-710-4476. More to get to here on the Bill Ryder Show. Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder. When we come back, I don't know what he's talking about. I don't know what he's saying. He sounds discombobulated. He sounds disconnected. He sounds like he doesn't know what the hell he's talking about. Imagine that. We'll get into it next on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Ryder Than You podcast.
Carl Dukes in for Bill Ryder. Happy Friday, everybody. 888-710-4ISN. That's 888-710-4476. Football is here, and I'm so happy. I'm ecstatic about it. Well, I was, at least until I heard Jerry Jones. And by the way, Dak Prescott today, I think he said this yesterday after practice, but Dak Prescott basically came out and said that if you do not believe, if you're in that locker room, Cowboys, if you do not believe in winning a Super Bowl, get out of here. Paraphrasing a little bit, but basically said, I don't want you here. And I have no problems with this. I know people who are not Cowboy fans, you are laughing because the Cowboys always find a way to screw it up. But he basically said it's been long enough. And look, the desire to say, hey, we don't have enough in this locker room to win a Super Bowl. If you don't believe in that, get out of here. I'm with him. That should be every locker room around the National Football League at this point. Now, we get to week 5, and you got a few 0-3 teams and some teams that are on the fringe of, you know, they've got one dub. That's a different question. That's a different statement. But right now, at the start of camp, every team should feel this way. Now, some more than others, right? Chiefs, Bills, Ravens. There are a lot of teams that feel like, hey, we're going to get back. Eagles are the defending champs. We know that. They obviously feel this way. But I'm with Dak. I have no problems with him saying something like this. Like, if you do not believe that we, in winning a Super Bowl, I don't want you in the locker room. I wouldn't either. If you're just here collecting a check and you're like, yeah, I think we're going to be okay. Okay. No, we're trying to do something here. So totally believe in what he's saying. What I don't believe in is what Jerry Jones said this week. What the hell is Jerry Jones saying? I mean, this is how you start camp. Jerry Jones talking about Micah Parsons, and all of a sudden this thing took a left turn. I mean, quickly. This thing went from like, okay, this is going to get resolved to, wait a minute, what did Jerry just say? So if you're unfamiliar, Cowboys camp starts out in California as it normally does. Jerry and his son, you know, they're taking questions. Brian Schottenheimer, the new head coach, also there taking questions. And they were talking about the path forward with Micah Parsons, who we know he's not a holdout. He's at camp. But Micah Parsons is seeing all these other edge rushers get their bag. And Parsons is like, okay. I mean, like, I know mine's coming sooner or later, but can we at least have a conversation? And Jerry and Steven, Daddy, that's Steven, revealed that neither one of them has spoken to Parsons or his agent. about a contract extension. Now, they did speak in March, okay? It's a long time ago. But they spoke with Parsons in March about this. And Jerry, though, basically started talking about taking shots at Micah Parsons and talking about the guys that he has paid and saying that some of the guys they've paid, maybe they paid too soon. Like, he's setting a parameter now for Micah Parsons, who hands down is one of the best players in the National Football League. Hands down, one of the best edge rushers in the National Football League. You're talking about all-pro, pro bowler. I mean, this is not even a discussion to me. But Jerry made it out to be like, he doesn't want to do this. It's not going to get done. And when he hinted at two extensions that they maybe did too soon, he was talking about Trayvon Diggs and offensive tackle Terrence Steele. Literally like, we did that too soon. And you're like, okay, so what's that got to do with Parsons? He also insinuated that Parsons missed a bunch of games when, in fact, he only missed four. I think Jerry insinuated he missed six. So as we dive into this, here's where I'm at. This is dumb. You have arguably one of the best and youngest players in the National Football League playing at a very high level. It is not Micah Parsons' fault that the offense was crap last year or Dak got hurt. Things happen. But if there's any questions whatsoever that the Cowboys or Jerry Jones should be paying Micah Parsons, it's not a question for me. This thing went sideways, and it made Jerry look incoherent. He's just going on. I mean, you would have thought he was talking about something completely outside of Micah Parsons, the way he was rumbling and making stuff up. Jerry even went as far as saying, and Nico's producing today. Nico, let me hear this. Jerry went as far as saying he didn't trust Micah Parsons to stay healthy. Listen.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt six games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out two-thirds of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
So that's going to stop you from paying Micah Parsons? Those are the examples you're going to use? I remember we paid a guy. What was his name, Steven?
Daddy!
Oh, yeah, well, we paid him, and he was hurt. Jerry, what are you talking about? It has nothing to do with Micah Parsons. That goes into every decision in the National Football League. There is a gamble when you sign guys to these deals. It's the nature of the business that you've been in now for 45 years. Come on, Jerry. But he wasn't done. This is the best part for me. This was the best part. When Jerry Jones insinuates that he could sign him, and all of a sudden that, God forbid, Parsons could get hit by a car. I'm not lying to you. Listen to this.
Contracts are 4 or 5 years. Okay? There's a lot of water under the bridge if you step out there and do something in the first two or three. You can get hit by a car. Seriously. And so there's a lot to look at over a lot of years that could make a big difference. Have you ever heard of any clubs committing to players and then they didn't pan out after they committed to them? We have.
You're not talking about an unproven commodity. You're talking about a kid that came in and was first team all pro his first 3 years in the league. 13 sacks, 14 sacks. You're not talking about an unproven player. There is risk reward in every golf shot. This is a golf shot. Jerry, are you going to attempt to go over the lake and carry it? Get onto the green, or you're going into the water. You got to take a chance. And the idea, like, to even bring up, he could get hit by a car. Seriously. Seriously. Seriously, you've got to be joking. Jerry Jones is out of his damn mind. He's out of his mind. I mean, it sounds senile to be saying some of the stuff that he's saying. And if you're a Cowboy fan and you're like, well, I agree with Jerry, then you are senile too. This is the most ridiculous thing I've ever heard. You're making lame excuses to not give Micah Parsons his bag when you know he's deserving. Parsons did respond. And I'll let you hear Parsons and Dak Prescott. Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder today here on this Friday. I couldn't believe it earlier this week when I heard this stuff. I felt like there was a string in the back of Jerry that Stephen Daddy was pulling, and literally Jerry was just spitting this stuff out. And he pulled the string, and Jerry, he could get hit by a car. Seriously. We paid others. We don't want to commit. I mean, like that. What? That's what it sounded like. It sounded like somebody was just pulling a string in the back of Jerry, and he was saying these obnoxious things that just didn't make sense. Jerry, get your head on. Pay this man. Pay this man his money. Here's Micah Parsons and why he showed up for camp. It's not about Jerry. He showed up because of his teammates.
At the end of the day, like, I'm here for my teammates. You know, I'm not here to please another grown man. I'm here for them. You know, I want to be here with Trey, watch him rehab, watch him get on the field, watch his growth. I want to be here battling with Terrence Steele. Like, I'm here for these guys. I'm not here for him.
He could get hit by a car. Seriously. It's unbelievable. It's just unreal. This is the most unbelievable. Is it really, though? It's Jerry. Is it really? It's just like, what are you talking about? I'm with Micah. You show up. You show your teammates you're committed. They've made no concerted effort to talk to him or his agent. He said he's going to talk to Jerry at some point. But Micah Parsons also makes it clear this is where he wants to be. He does not want to be anywhere else. He wants to be in Dallas.
I want to be here. I've always stated I want to be here. But, you know, at the end of the day, they sign the checks like always. And let's see if they want me to be here at the end of the day.
Yeah. Look, I think they do. Jerry, what do you think? He could get hit by a car. Seriously. I think he does. What do you think, Steven?
Daddy!
I don't know what the hell they want. And to bring up Diggs and Steele, the offensive tackle I was talking about earlier, like to project, that's what he's doing. He's saying because he paid Trayvon Diggs and offensive tackle Terrence Steele earlier than we should. We paid him earlier than maybe he wanted or should have, because they both signed in 2023, but they've struggled with injuries and poor performance. There's no debating that, but it's risk-reward. You going to hit the golf shot? You going to carry the lake or not, Jerry? Cowboys aren't going anywhere. Let me be clear about this. Even if you don't think they're that good or you think they're going to be great, they are not doing anything that you think they can without Micah Parsons on the field this year. They're just not. You take him out of the equation, you just don't replace him with another buster. So when he said, Jerry, when he said, frankly, we should have waited on those extensions for Diggs and Steele, what he's saying is we should wait on Micah Parsons. That's what he's talking about. He's literally saying that without saying it. He's trying to be kind and gentle. Seriously. But it just doesn't come off right. Cowboys triggered a clause in Diggs' contract that also peeled back his base salary by $500,000. They say he failed to participate in at least 84% of the team's offseason workouts. The deal with this is, and this is rare, but we just saw the Raiders do this with one of their players, where Christian, I think it's Christian Watkins, Wilkins, that is, who just got released, voiding his $32 million of his guaranteed money. He's filed a grievance. But Diggs spent a majority of the offseason working out and rehabbing his surgically repaired left knee in South Florida. So he also did rehab with his own specialist rather than under the watchful eye of the Dallas training staff. So the Cowboys said, oh, well, we don't think you've met the qualifications. We're taking $500,000 back. But Jerry also made it clear earlier this week that he expects Diggs to be a leader in camp, despite starting off on the pup list, the physically unable to perform list. I just feel like this is gone sideways, and it doesn't have to. and you're making Micah Parsons feel a certain kind of way when it doesn't have to. Parsons quarterback Dak Prescott was asked about Micah getting paid. This is what he said about it.
I don't know if there's a correct way to handle it, to be honest with you. I will say that I think he deserves to get paid, think he should get paid, and ultimately, if I'm going off of the history of what I've seen, he will get paid. Hopefully, it's sooner than later.
Yeah, and remember, Jerry was like, we're not going to pay Dak, right? We're not paying him. And then, like, they paid him, like, before week one, remember? And, like, in a hotel room or something. It was weird. Instead of just owning the fact, like, we're not ready to start over. He's our guy. We believe in him. He's come back from that nasty ankle injury and, you know, all of that stuff. He's a class act. And I've said this. Dak Prescott is a guy that if you had a daughter, you go, I want my daughter to date that guy or marry that guy. Because that's how you feel about him as a person. You feel like he is a class act. That's not criticizing his quarterback play or critiquing him as a quarterback, because there are question marks. We know that. But as a person, a human being, Dak Prescott has always been on the up and up. And it feels like, you know, he said it. I don't know when, but from what I understand, or at least what my experience is, he's probably going to get paid. And Jerry is going to snap out of it. He's going to be sitting there one day and somebody will pull the string. I want to pay him. And he'll pay him. It's just the weirdest thing. Cowboys starting off camp just as we assumed they would, with a bunch of storylines and a lot of stuff that still is yet unanswered. 888-710-4476. We'll see, because this really gets interesting. Got to tell you, once the season starts. Because then you know what the answer is going to be, right? You know what it's going to be then. Pull the string. Season started. We don't negotiate. That's what it's going to be. And then all of a sudden, now you've got a guy who's playing and really doesn't have any security moving forward. It's going to feel weird. Now, Ja'Marr Chase did this last year, remember? And he balled out. And Ja'Marr Chase got the largest contract of any wide receiver in NFL history. Maybe that happens with Micah Parsons if they want to play this game. I would not play this game. I already know what the market is. I am not playing this game. You just saw TJ Watt in Pittsburgh get his deal. I am not playing this game if I'm the Cowboys. 3 years, $123 million, highest paid non-quarterback in league history, and deserving. But part of that is TJ Watt's age. Micah's younger than he is. His deal's going to be bigger. It's going to be bigger than Myles Garrett. It's going to be bigger. And you're playing with fire if you feel like, well, we'll just roll into the season because I don't have to pay him, because these other guys that I paid early, you know, they've been injured and they get hit by a car. Seriously. It's not the way to do business. 888-710-4476. Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder. We're coming back. It's time for Buy or Sell. When we do, we'll find out what Nico has for us here on the Infinity Sports Network.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast. Welcome back to Writer Than You.
The slam dunk contest is just dumb. It's a slam dumb contest.
That's good.
I've renamed it. Whatever. What's the guy's name? The dude from the G League? Mac McWhocaresy Lung? Or whatever his name is? Nobody cares.
On the Infinity Sports Network.
Carl Dukes in for Bill Ryder. Happy Friday, everybody. Hope you're going to have a great weekend. It's going to be fun watching some camps around the NFL, and certainly college football camps opening up here at the end of the month. And before you know it, August 23rd, we have college football. That's right. August 30th, which heads us, you know, into obviously the Labor Day weekend, we got a slew of games. And then we get to the start of the NFL, early September. It's going to be here before you know it. It is time for buy or sell. We got to get to it. Let's get to buy or sell, Nico.
What side will Bill take on the biggest issues in the world of sports? It's time for today's edition of Buy or Sell on Writer Than You.
All right, Carl, why don't we start in the National Football League. The Las Vegas Raiders made a move. You mentioned it earlier. Christian Wilkins has been released by the team with the designation of terminated vested veteran. Buy or sell that the Raiders did not make the right decision here.
No, I'm going to sell. I sell. Think when you have these players and these rehab situations, they're across the board on every team. But you're talking about lots of money that is still guaranteed on some of these deals. The players have to live up to their bargain, their side of things. And look, when I'm talking about their side of things, I'm not talking about them not rehabbing. But just like with the situation I talked about with Trayvon Diggs with the Cowboys, you're rehabbing with your people. That's great. But you still have to check in with the team. You still have to let them know that you're doing the necessary things. So he was recovering from a Jones fracture, which he suffered in his left foot back in October. Because of how Jones had treated the rehab from his injury, the Raiders voided the remaining $32 million. That's a lot of money left on his deal. And so the belief was that Wilkins needed another surgery on his foot, but he didn't want to get it. So then the Raiders voided the guaranteed money left on his deal due to failure to maintain his physical condition to play. They did the right thing. I think they did the right thing here. I have a hard time saying, and look, I don't know the circumstances of the foot. I'm not an orthopedic surgeon or any of that, but he had 50 days from June 4th to ask the NFLPA to file a grievance on his behalf. They did so yesterday. It was the last day that it was eligible to happen. So we'll see where this goes. I think he probably gets some of his money, but he's not getting all of his money. And part of this is you got to make these decisions when it comes to your health, when this kind of money is invested. Last offseason, he signed a four-year, $110 million deal, $84 million guaranteed, and they just basically took $32 million back.
Over in the AFC North, Aaron Rodgers was at Steelers camp for the first time, and he spoke to the media and said that he thinks that Pittsburgh is one of the 10 to 12 teams that could realistically win a Super Bowl. Before the Steelers worry about winning a Super Bowl, they've got to win a playoff game first. Haven't done that in 9 years. Buy or sell, Carl, that this is the year the Steelers will finally get to at least the divisional round.
Nico, I know you don't like it, but I got to buy. Got to buy. The Steelers, as you mentioned, have lost six straight playoff games. But the Steelers also was a team that was 10-3 through 14 weeks last year with Justin Fields and Russell Wilson as their quarterback. Are you willing to tell me Aaron Rodgers is not going to be at least that good, if not better? Here's the thing. Yesterday, don't know if you guys saw it, his first play at practice yesterday was a pick. And everybody's like, oh, here we go. And then Aaron made a joke afterwards and said, well, got that out of the way. It's practice. It's why you practice. It's what he's out there for. I don't get carried away one way or the other about a pick, even though it was the first play in practice. I think the Steelers are one of the teams that we'll be talking about. And I know a lot of people don't believe this. They think they're old. They think they're washed up. Again, 10-3 through 14 weeks. They ended the season on a five-game losing streak. The question is why? Steelers offense has to be better this year. And I think if there is a connection between the quarterback, that's Aaron Rodgers, and the OC, and Arthur Smith, they are going to be in contention.
Over on the NFC side, the New York Giants enter season number four with Brian Daboll at the helm as head coach. He comes into year four with an 18-32-1 record through the first three seasons, but this is the first time he will enter a new year without Daniel Jones. Buy or sell that Daboll enters 2025 with the most pressure out of any head coach in the league.
Boy, it's really interesting. I do think there is pressure because they've stayed the course with Daboll. There was a thought that this offseason he might get got. He did not. But then they go out, and what do? They end up drafting and getting a quarterback. The question is for the Giants, how soon does that quarterback take over? And, you know, speaking of Russell Wilson, he's there. Jameis Winston is there. They'll fill the void in the meantime. But ultimately, this is about Daboll and his new quarterback and the long-term viability of what that relationship is going to look like if he's ultimately going to have the kind of success that they need him to have. Let me tell you this, 18-32-1, that ain't enough. As Kendrick Lamar says, it's not enough. That's not enough. So I think there is pressure on him to get it done, and he does enter the season with the most pressure on the hot seat as an NFL coach. There's no debating for me, because if they look like they're just flopping around halfway through the season, it wouldn't surprise me if they cut the cord then.
Bye.
All right, we talked about Micah Parsons in the last segment. He and James Cook both in the middle of some contract disputes, but both have reported to camp. They are there with their team. Buy or sell that we need to see more players learn from these two guys and just report to camp, even if they don't have the contract that they like?
Look, I respect it, but I also respect money. Pay that man his money. Pay me what you owe me. As the WNBA star said at the WNBA All-Star Game, look, I'm all for respecting the game and the players that you play with and your teammates and saying, you know what, like Micah Parsons said, I'm here for my guys. But there is a risk. And, you know, the scare yesterday with Justin Fields is a prime example of that. He got stepped on and dislocated his toe, and everybody thought him being carted off him at the end of the year. There is a risk when you show up just being out there. That's why they get paid what they do. And so I do respect it. I'm going to buy. Let me buy.
Buy.
And I like the fact that they're both there. James Cook for the Bills, Micah Parsons for the Cowboys. But I don't know if I would do it. I don't know if I would. There's that risk that you step out on the field, you twist an ankle, boom, season's done. I'm just saying, but I'll buy.
I'm with you that there's a bigger risk in football than there are in other sports, I guess, to get hurt in training camp. But we don't see this in other sports. Like in the NBA, they could be out there practicing and someone could twist an ankle or get injured. We see all these non-contact injuries happen in other sports too. So I just find it weird that football is the only sport where they're like, yeah, I'm not showing up.
Okay, let me tell you why. I signed 3 years, $100 million in the NBA. Nico, I get all of my money. It is guaranteed, hurt or not. Major League Baseball, I signed 5 years, $180 million. I get all of my money, hurt or not. The NFL is not that way. We see the numbers in these deals, but it is the guaranteed money that really anybody cares about. We talk about these signing bonuses and the overall contract. It is rare in the NFL that anybody sees the end of their deal. So these guys know it. A five-year deal is really a two-year deal with all the money paid up front. That is why they're reluctant, because they want to get to that fourth or fifth year so they can get all of their money, and it doesn't happen a lot.
Speaking of contract disputes, we've now had issues with that at the collegiate level as well. Nico Iamaliava is headed to UCLA. We heard about that earlier this summer, and he spoke to the media for the first time since all that went down with the NIL stuff with Tennessee. He claims that he chose to go to UCLA because it's closer to home, and says that the NIL dispute with Tennessee was, quote, false reports. Buy or sell that Nico Iamaliava is lying straight to our faces?
Oh, I'm buying that. I'm buying that. Nico, stop it. This is false. This is not true. This is fake news. I don't believe it. And if you're trying to sell to us that, oh, well, I want to be closer to home, well, then why don't you go there in the first place? Oh, Tennessee paid you more money at the time. And now you want to go back to somewhere where they're going to pay you just a little bit more. Here's the funny thing about this. Kirk Herbstreit was talking about his dad, who had said, hey, Josh Heupel, the head coach of Tennessee, and you need to get some, you know, guys around Nico, man. We want to make sure he's got a chance to make the pros. So, you know, he needs better receivers, better protection. Okay, like every college coach is not looking to do that. But I don't think Nico is in a better place, Iamaliava. I don't think he's in a better place now than he was when he was at Tennessee. You got better receivers, better linemen at UCLA? Stop it. This is all false. Stop perpetrating. Stop capping. This is a lie.
Sharon Moore met the media at Big Ten Media Days, and he was talking about last year's incident down in Columbus where Michigan defeats Ohio State. They plant the flag. It leads to an all-out brawl on the field. He told reporters that there will be no more flag planting after games. By or so that you had no issue with the flag planting we saw last year.
I had no issue with the flag planting I saw last year. But I'll say this. I'm not about the brawls and the violence. I know Ohio State, the Ohio State, was trying to protect their home field. First of all, win the game. But secondly, I'm one of these guys, Nico. I totally buy in and believe into, like, storming the field. I was just having this conversation the other day on my show. I said, look, if you're in college, if you went to college, it's a special time. And if your teams are good or you do something special, right, like you beat your rival and you hadn't beaten them in years, or you win a national championship, or something crazy happens, but usually it's on your home field, I'm storming the field. Because I'm never going to get a chance to do that. And I know all of these conferences are now putting down fines and, you know, they're penalizing these schools. Come on. Everybody's so afraid, like, oh, somebody could get hurt. Give me a break. It's a once-in-a-lifetime deal. So for Ohio and Michigan, I think this is cool. I'm glad that Coach said there will be no more flag planting. You've got to figure out other ways and show respect to your opponent. But this rivalry's gotten so nasty, realistic, it's gotten so nasty that if they're not doing something like this and showing up their opponent, it's almost like, what are we here for? So my thing is, win the game. That's planting the flag. When you win the game on their field, just like Ohio State will try to do this year at Michigan, that's planting the flag. But I respect Sharon Moore for saying he's directed his players to celebrate in a different way. But I'm all for it. Like, for me, I'm like, plant the flag. Like this is fun. But I'm not for the violence, and that's what it ultimately leads to.
Bye.
All right, a couple baseball ones for you here super quick. The Seattle Mariners made the first big trade here with a week to go before the trade deadline, acquiring Josh Naylor from the Arizona Diamondbacks. Naylor this year hitting .292. His OPS is up over 800, 59 runs batted in. Seattle currently sitting in that second wild card spot in the American League. Buy or sell that this acquisition makes the Mariners a World Series contender?
Bye. Big time buy.
Buy.
This is a monster move by the Mariners, who are really good. The problem is, I don't know how much the rest of America is watching the Mariners, because those games don't come on until like 10:30, especially on the East Coast. They're really good. The Astros are good as well. That's a given. They're there again. But I think if you want to take a shot and be all in, this is the kind of move that you have to do. They're 7-3 in their last 10 games. We know they've got some RBI and run producers on that squad already. And to add another one, and Naylor is a huge move for the Mariners. I'm buying this all day, every day.
Last one for you. Bryce Harper on Wednesday hit his 350th career home run. Harper, the two-time MVP, eight-time All-Star, is having another good year despite dealing with some injuries along the way. Buy or sell that if Harper retired tomorrow, he would already be a Hall of Famer?
Ooh. 350 home runs?
Yeah, 350.
Two-time National League MVP? No.
Sell.
No. Dale Murphy was a multiple-time MVP player in the National League. Has more home runs. He's not in. Not yet. Bryce Harper has been great. Do not misunderstand me. But he still has some more things to accomplish when you talk about those career numbers. With baseball being such a numbers game, 400, he gets to 400, I tell you, yes. But he's 50 away from there, and with the way his injury situation has played out through his career, I'm not sure if he'll get there, but not yet. Not yet for Bryce Harper. Great work, Nico. Hey, coming up, it's complicated. I mean, it is. It's complicated. We'll talk about it coming up next.
You're listening to the Writer Than You podcast.
What are you going to do when Hulkamania runs wild on you? Carl Duke's in for Bill Ryder. Yesterday, we got the news that Hulk Hogan passed away at age 71. And as a kid who grew up on wrestling, cheap entertainment for my mom to take us and a family to the wrestling matches, I thoroughly enjoyed it. And as I fast forward through my life and, you know, get into this media world, and at one point in the early 2000s had a chance to work for WWE. Did not happen because of the travel and the things that it entailed. But over the years, I've gotten to know a lot of wrestlers because of stuff that I've done with the wrestling World Wrestling Federation and then WWE. At the end of the day, I was mixed. And it's weird because I met Hulk Hogan in my early 20s. I was starting in this business, and he came to our radio station, and I was sort of a third wheel on a morning show. And the guy that I worked with said, you got a lot of potential. why don't you come in and just hang out with us? And Hogan comes in, and he's in full character, and the show's in town. You know, they're putting on matches, and I remember taking a picture with him afterwards, and it was funny because I was the guy who brought him into the studio, and we talked, like, in the green room where our guests were waiting, and just chopping it up with him and talking about, you know, all the great matches and things that I had seen up to that point, and you know, how iconic he was even at that point. And this is prior to him even, I think, getting bigger when he went NWO. But, and then I was the guy to walk him out to, like, this Sprinter van at the time. It was not a limo, but, you know, he had drivers and stuff, and they were taking him around town. And so we talked. I probably talked to him more than anybody, and he was like, where can I get something to eat? You know, we were talking about the best places in town and all this kind of stuff. This is in San Antonio, Texas, by the way. And, but you got a sense of who he was. And I said this yesterday when we got word that he had passed, like, the guy that you saw was the guy you got. And I took that picture, and years later, as I grew in this business, it was on my wall in my office, and then ultimately it's on my wall in my man cave. And people come in my house, and they always go, "Is that Hulk Hogan?" And I'm like, "Yeah. I'm a kid. I look very, very, I'm young, but that's a long time ago." And it is. And he's got the bandana on and like, man, that's crazy. And in the background, you can see like the station van. And yesterday when he passed, I thought about that picture being on my wall for many, many years. But I also thought about the complicated history of Hulk Hogan. And, you know, the things that happened in his life that really brought attention in a way that I don't think anybody expected, nor do I think he wanted. Because in July of 2015, a private conversation from a 2007 sex tape that came out that surfaced, he had made racist remarks. And those remarks, you know, they were shockwaves through the wrestling community, certainly to all the fans that had followed him over the decades. And there's no debating this. Hulk Hogan was larger than life. I mean, he was a childhood icon for millions of fans, not just the United States, around the world. And I just saw a tribute from The Rock. It's on Insta. And obviously, they were in the ring together. The Rock tells this amazing story about how he was at Madison Square Garden, and Hogan was fighting Mr. Wonderful Paul Orndorff, and it was the main event, and Hogan throws him his bandana or his headband, and The Rock says, "I was the kid that caught it that night." And you guys know The Rock's dad was a wrestler. I mean, you know his history. But he says, "A month later in Madison Square Garden, you promised that you'd give me that Hulkster headband of my own because you said you didn't have any that they could duplicate, so you needed it back after he threw it to the crowd." The Rock catches it, and then after the matches, obviously, he says, "Hey, kid, I need that back." And he promised that he would get a 12-year-old boy one of his own. And so The Rock goes on and says, that's exactly what happened. And then 17 years later, he says, "I'm still a kid. I'm 29 years old, and I'm standing in the middle of the ring with you facing off." It's a hell of a tribute if you haven't seen it. And he just tells a great story. But I think there's no debating as a performer and as his contributions, they helped usher in wrestling and into the mainstream. There's no debate about that. The explosion of WWE in the 80s, he's a cultural icon. All of that is cemented. But I think when you start talking about his legacy and why it's complex, it's because of the public persona and then private. And when he was asked about those comments, he said, "I'm not a racist, blah, blah, blah." He talked about, you know, it was wrong and I'm embarrassed by it. But he never really owned it. He kind of deflected it, right? And said basically something to the point that, you know, he was a product of his environment. And some people didn't believe him. They didn't buy it. It was an apology that kind of rung hollow. So at the time, I think Hulk was like 61. I mean, he died at 71, so it had to be 10 years or so ago. But you're talking about a 61-year-old man who experienced the world a lot, like probably most don't get a chance to. And so part of this, when we heard that he had passed away, was the nostalgia of what we remember as kids if you are old enough to have seen him and what he was. This Hulkamania thing was, again, it's hard to explain to anybody who doesn't or hasn't experienced it. It was huge. Toys and figures and you name it. He had a record. Hulk Hogan had a record. So, I mean, and he wasn't singing. He's just like phrases, you know? It's just stuff that he would say. But it's what makes us feel good. That nostalgia is where most of you are right now when you say, hey, Hulk Hogan passed away. And you went, oh. Because you're thinking about the wrestling aspect and the matches and all the things that, made you excited as a kid or that you got a chance to experience. Even if you didn't really like wrestling, you knew who he was and how big he was, whether it was the movies or any other thing that he pretty much touched at his height. But sometimes we have to separate the art from the artist. Everybody's flawed. Everybody. And so as I said yesterday, when I got word, hey, Hogan passed away, and it was like, whoa, and we lost Malcolm Jamal Warner this week. I mean, you know, a lot of people were talking about the legacy of the Cosby Show and what that meant and what his legacy is. I can separate that. He didn't have anything to do with that. The show was great when the show was on. But for Hogan, he was entertaining. He revolutionized wrestling. There's no debating that. But sometimes these legacies are complicated when you say, who was the real person? How did he really feel? What was he really about? And I think some people are struggling with that today and yesterday as we acknowledge that we just lost the greatest wrestler of all time. That is what he was. And again, if you are in the mid-90s and you're talking about that yellow tank top and that red bandana and that blonde hair and the that handlebar mustache and him ripping shirts off and the phrases, it's just what it was. And we're not just talking about kids. Adults alike loved Hulk Hogan because those adults took their kids to wrestling matches. Those kids are now still wrestling fans. And when he went Hollywood Hogan on the WCW days, as the black bearded villain, it even took his fame to another level. But I also think sometimes we have to have a real reflection on what people say and what they do. Because that's who you are in life. It's what you do. It's what you say. And I know for all the kids that felt like, hey, Hulk Hogan, I looked up to him and he was a guy that gave me positive inspiration. You know, take your vitamins. I get it. Because I think we all were there. Like, this is cool. He was a cultural phenomenon. But I also know that we just don't know them. That's the case for a lot of these stars and entertainers and individuals. We don't. We just don't. So I thank him for his contributions. Certainly wrestling changed. He was a hell of a performer. But I also think that this story is complicated. And I think some people are dealing with that because, as I said, sometimes those personas become more important than principles or when catchphrases, they, you know, they overshadow the character. And sometimes that happens and you get so caught up in that character, you think that's who he is. And I don't know if that's who he was. But a lot of people talking about Hulk Hogan today and remembering him, and The Rock is one of them. And again, that tribute is on Instagram. Hey, thanks for being here today. Thanks to Bill Ryder. He's back on Monday. Hope you have a great weekend. I'm Carl Dukes. I'll be back on the Infinity Sports Network on Sunday. Make sure you tune in 6 to 10. Yeah, Rich Eisen's coming up next. Nico, thank you. My man Andrew Bogish as well. Everybody have a great weekend. We'll talk to you soon here on the Infinity Sports Network.